This is Brian Cambria with news for the Western Slope, this Tuesday, August 27th, 2013. The BLM yesterday announced five new appointments to the agency's Southwest Resource Advisory Council, the 15-member group that advises the BLM on public land issues for the Uncompahgre, Gunnison, and Tres Rios field offices. The new council members come from the towns of Durango, Paonia, Dove Creek, Montrose, and Ridgeway, and will be representing such issues as recreation, elected officials from towns and counties in the area, environmental organizations, and energy development. A full list of the new appointees is available at the BLM's Southwest Resource Advisory Council website at blm.gov. The Denver Post reports that a new constitutional question over the impending recall elections of Colorado Senators John Morse and Angela Huron could put the elections in murky legal water. According to the Post, State Attorney General John Southers is calling on the Colorado Supreme Court to decide whether the state's constitutional language on recall elections might be in conflict with the U.S. Constitution. State law currently requires voters to vote yes or no in the recall elections before they're eligible to vote on a successor. Southers said a similar provision in California was declared unconstitutional in 2003. Governor John Hickenlooper has asked the state Supreme Court for clarification. If Colorado's rule on the voting process is found to be unconstitutional, it could mean voters would not have to vote for or against the recall, but could still vote for a successor in the event the recall passes. According to the Post, if the court doesn't clarify the issue, opponents of the recall might have a chance at challenging the elections on constitutional grounds. The recall elections for Morse and Huron are set to take place on September 10th, with Republican George Rivera on the ballot against Huron, and Republican Bernie Herpin running against Morse. The elections are the first of their kind in Colorado history. The Colorado Parks and Wildlife Division told the State Audit Committee yesterday that its coffers are becoming increasingly drained. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
An earlier audit showed that the Parks and Wildlife Division overestimated how much money was in a key bank account. And overall, money in the wildlife fund is also dropping. Steve King heads the Colorado Department of Natural Resources. He says it's not where they want to be.
The Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission is aggressively looking at cuts of probably upwards of $10 million a year. And we're going to be having that discussion in September and an adoption of a budget proposal in November that will begin making long-term permanent reductions.
In the past, the division's had to freeze capital construction projects and reduce staff. Most of the money on the wildlife side comes from hunting and fishing licenses, but fewer people have been buying those licenses over the last several years. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Staff members for U.S. Senator Michael Bennett recently held a listening session in Paonia to gather community input on the 2013 Farm Bill. Bennett was selected to serve on the Farm Bill Conference Committee this year, a bipartisan group tasked with bringing together two very different versions of the bill passed by the House and Senate. KVNF's Travis Bubenik attended the session, where farmers, ranchers, county representatives, and interested citizens met to ask Bennett's staffers about his position on agricultural issues and to offer guidance on where legislative efforts should be focused going forward.
Much of the discussion at the meeting revolved around how or whether the Farm Bill can address issues related to Western Colorado's organic industry, centered in the North Fork Valley, but spread across Delta and neighboring counties as well. Organics are a staple of the regional economy, both in terms of food supply and, increasingly, recreation and tourism, and the industry continues to grow.
There's a lot more demand than there is supply.
Kevin McGruther, president of the Crested Butte Farmers Market, has seen that growth firsthand.
At this point, most of our farmers, especially the main bulk of their crop, they're selling out by the middle of the market. We run from 10 to 2, and they're selling out by noon or 1 on a lot of their product. We need a lot more help getting more supply, and it's a long game.
He says farmers are having a hard time producing enough to sell for the whole market day. Though not likely to be passed anytime soon, I ask him if government subsidies for organics would help.
Well, I'm not a fan of necessarily subsidization because it doesn't show the real cost of food to the consumers. If you were to go ahead and have subsidizations anyway, I would say that anything you could do that would direct it to specialty crops in particular, that's going to help a lot.
Subsidies, we don't get subsidies.
That's Mark Waltermeyer, president of the Valley Organic Growers Association and part owner of the 16-acre Thistle Whistle Farm. He says that while the Farm Bill's funding of large-scale commodity crops like corn and wheat needs reform, he doesn't expect to see that money diverted to organic crops anytime soon. But he says other aspects of the Farm Bill can directly help.
There's a whole raft of small-scale programs that can help organic growers, and funding those would be a huge help to us. Research into organics and alternatives to chemical pest controls, all that stuff is wonderful. Research into alternative crops is great. Research into marketing, assistance with marketing.
Those kinds of programs have traditionally been lumped under the bill's conservation section. While not a direct crop subsidy, one of those conservation efforts does contain an organics initiative, which allows budding organic farmers to apply for money that they can use to make sure their operation is environmentally sustainable. That doesn't necessarily translate to more revenue for farmers, but it does provide some sort of framework for those wishing to transition into organics or jump straight into the industry, especially young farmers. As America's farmers continue to age, less young people are getting into agriculture, and those that do aren't interested in conventional growing. But Waltermeyer says organic growers tend to favor independence over government assistance. Most growers in the Valley don't even get USDA organic certifications, choosing instead to just communicate directly with their customers about the farm's standards.
It's expensive and a hassle, and we don't want to do it. So we figure out ways of marketing that, you know, we're small enough. I mean, I'm small enough that it doesn't matter whether I certify or not. I'm in direct contact with the people who buy my stuff, and if they have questions about the methods I use to grow it, they can ask me.
But he says organic farming is still hard, and the government could take some steps to address challenges faced by small-scale farmers.
It's quite possible that the Farm Bill could be a key to helping organic, small-scale organic growers find a more reliable, a more secure income, or a more secure position. But we have a long ways to go to get there. It'd be something to aspire to.
There is more support for organic agriculture production this time around based on the fact that this is what people want and it's a new source of wealth in agriculture.
Grant Colvin is a legislative assistant for Senator Bennett.
We have a big reason to support this sort of industry in Colorado right now, and it benefits everybody to make sure the agriculture is thriving around here, and if that's organics, then we need to find a way to make sure that we're giving you guys the tools you need in order to get it done.
Most of the current Farm Bill debate in Washington surrounds the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is drastically defunded under the House version passed in June. Waltermeyer says he started to see a jump in his customers using food stamps, with those sales sometimes accounting for 20% of his profits at farmers markets. While that might be a sign that Farm Bill programs do have the potential to bolster the organic industry, it's still unclear whether lawmakers will be able to pass a Farm Bill at all before the current programs expire on September 30th. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.
After a second reading, the town of Ridgeway has approved an ordinance to regulate retail marijuana businesses. According to the Telluride Watch, the ordinance will allow only 4 licenses to be approved for medical or retail marijuana shops. The ordinance also limits those businesses to 1 optional license for cultivating marijuana on their premises. Only 2 licenses for cultivation facilities and 2 for testing facilities will be approved in the town. The Ridgeway Town Council also agreed to keep retail shops or facilities at least 1,000 feet away from schools, residential child care facilities, or alcohol or drug treatment centers. The council voted 5-1 in favor of the updated ordinance, with Councilman Jim Cavanaugh being the 1 dissenting vote. According to The Watch, Cavanaugh took the occasion to reiterate his concerns about retail marijuana activity in the town, stating that as a clinical psychologist, he has seen what he called the negative consequences and potential addictive quality of non-medical marijuana. Cavanaugh also characterized the retail marijuana industry as, quote, a risky cultural experiment, end quote, and said it could easily be shuttered by the federal government. Colorado and other states will receive their full shares of money from the leasing of federal lands for mining or drilling within their borders as the Interior Department reconsiders whether sequestration applies to the money. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that means more than $5.7 million from federal mineral leases will be distributed to the state and various local governments affected by the development of minerals on federal lands. The Office of Natural Resources Revenue wrote to Colorado Treasurer Walker Stapleton on Monday that funds sequestered in 2013 will be available in fiscal year 2014, which begins October 1st. U.S. Senators Mark Udall and Michael Bennett, both Colorado Democrats, welcomed the turnabout by the Obama administration. Udall, who is a member of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, joined Bennett earlier this year and asked the administration to restore mineral leasing revenues to Colorado. The Interior Department letter came to light just as the Mesa County Mineral Lease District wrote to Interior Secretary Sally Jewell that Western Colorado schools, parks, roads, and other local programs would wrongly suffer under sequestration. The Mesa County Federal Mineral Lease District wrote that the state share of mineral lease revenues, quote, is not a federal expenditure nor a federal appropriation subject to sequestration. The board of the lease district joined with Colorado Attorney General John Southers and the Conference of Western Attorneys General in asking the Interior passing money and asking that Interior begin passing money back to the states and local governments, insisting that under federal law, the federal government had no authority to withhold the state's share of mineral leases. And finally this morning, according to the Denver Post, an El Paso County judge was reported to have gone into hiding and placed under police protection for a period of 2 weeks earlier this month after learning that the 211 crew prison gang had ordered his killing. An anonymous source told the Post that the hit on Judge Jonathan L. Walker was ordered in retaliation for his part in the investigation into the assassination of Colorado Prisons Chief Tom Clements. The source for that information is reportedly close to the Clements case and had access to sealed court documents. According to the Post, the source confirmed allegations that Clements' assassination was ordered by leaders of the 211 crew, a white supremacist prison gang, and also offered new details into the actions of Evan Ebel, the man accused of killing Clements, and pizza delivery driver Nathan Leon in March while out on parole. Ebel was later killed in a shootout with deputies in Texas. Judge Walker is said to have taken a leave of absence earlier this month after three criminal sources, two of them being jail informants, informed him of the call for his killing. However, State Court Administrator spokesman John Sarche denied that report, saying no judge from El Paso County courts has been on leave. During the course of the Clements investigation, Walker signed around 20 search warrants against members of the prison gang, including searches of their homes and cell phone records. The anonymous source told the Post that Colorado Springs SWAT team members had informed Clements he was a, quote, sitting duck at his home. One of the judge's former legal clients also reportedly called Walker to inform him directly of the threats. Thus concludes this morning's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.